Oh, and a word with you. Bray's not back, and it's your fault he left. What are you gonna do about it?
I didn't force him to go. That was his own choice.
After attacking him? Throwing doubt on his leadership? What other choice did he have?
I only said what he needed to hear, Celine.
I think Bray's right. You are bitter about Amber. I even think you're jealous over his leadership. And now, you've gone and deprived us of a leader just when we need him the most.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 42 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hola.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 42, the screenplay was done by Joe Boyle. It was directed by John Reed, and the episode synopsis were read out by Tamsin.
Bray tries to numb the pain, while in the mall, Celine blames Pride for his disappearance. Ned and Ebony each try to get the upper hand in their uneasy alliance, and Casey makes an unusual trade.
Discovering that Bray's bed hasn't been slept in, Celine confronts Pride and blames him for Bray's departure.
This tribe exists because of Bray! Yeah? So what's the tribe gonna do now that he's walked out on them? Meanwhile, the guy you're accusing of driving him away is planning how to get Amber back. Something wrong, Summer, wouldn't you say?
So yeah, panel, what did you make of this argument?
I guess it makes sense for who's involved in it.
I mean, Celine looking in to see if Bray's bet has been slept in. Mm. Yeah, fairy Celine. Of course you'll notice that Bray isn't in her bed, in his bed.
I love the way she just walked in there. I know there's no door, but still.
I'd like to know why these guys always assume that if somebody spent the night away, like, didn't come home that night, that they're gone forever. Like, I don't... They jump to such conclusions. And it doesn't work because, literally, Amber and Trudy just disappeared. And look how long it took them to realize that something was wrong. Like, they were actually gone and didn't go for a walk or something like that. Or, like, they spent an entire day coming up with all the excuses in the world for why the girls weren't in the mall anymore. And yet, Bray didn't come home last night after he was clearly very upset. And it's an immediate, he's run away and he's never coming back. Rather than, hey, he needed a night out. You know what I mean? Like, I understand being a little concerned that, oh no, Bray didn't come home last night. I hope he's okay. But you jump to the conclusion that, well, that's it. He left outside.
And also, you know, Celine, why on earth do you know Bray hasn't slept in his bed? Have you been sitting out in front of that non-existent door all night? Or, you know, did you...
How early is it?
I think it looked quite tidy, though. So I think it was obvious that no one had slept in that bed.
Yeah.
What if he had made it? What if he was just up early and he made his bed? Or he just didn't go to sleep because he was up all night worrying or being upset? Or
Like, unless she made that bed herself, and Bray never does that, there's no reason not to expect it to have been Bray who made that bed and just went out early that morning to, you know, go look for his pregnant girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, another thing you could say is maybe Bray can't actually sleep in that bed without Amber. So instead he's gone and taken his old hammock somewhere and he's just in another space in the mall.
Yeah, something. Just, it's such a huge conclusion to jump to that he's just gone, you know, when it's like he was upset.
It's creepy. Celine kept tabs on it.
Right. Like, he could be on the roof. He might have spent the whole night, you know, either someplace else or just, it would make sense if he wasn't able to sleep or sleep in the bed where Amber isn't there or just didn't go to bed because he's got things on his mind. I don't know why you jump to, he never came back. He must have left us. Mm. Like, for someone who's going to defend him so ardently, have a little faith in him. just a little.
Is it truly he's left us? It's not a He left me all alone here, Celine.
I love Celine's comment about there wouldn't be a tribe without Bray. And you're thinking, what are you smoking, girl?
From her point of view, maybe it feels that way, because for her, he was for her, many of the times, he was the reason she felt like their tribe had a future, a hope. Even from day one, that's how she felt about Pride. I mean, sorry, about Bray. The idea of him leaving, even in season one, when she barely knew him, felt pretty devastating for her. So, you know, I guess from her point of view, I could see why she structures the tribe around him. I'm sure she likely felt the same about Amber, but then Amber died, you know what I mean? And so it's like she no longer associates Amber that way with the tribe. In her eyes, it was Bray who kept the tribe together, even though he was the first to want to abandon it after Amber's death. You know what I mean? Like, I just guess from her point of view, that makes some sort of sense.
I mean, if we're being honest about who actually kept that tribe together after season two, after season one, what happened in the explosion, it was Trudy. Trudy kept that tribe together.
Yep.
Aside from her jumping to the conclusion that Bray is just gone, I guess it makes sense that she confronts Pride, you know, on it. Like, you chased him off by, you know, and thinking, you know, you're jealous of him. I mean, she's not wrong. Pride clearly is jealous of Bray. And then, of course, Pride being like, look, it was Bray's choice wherever he's gone, whatever he's doing. May defending him. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't see what Celine is doing as any different than May accusing Bray of chasing Pride off.
I was just about to bring that up. Thank you. Yeah.
You know,
it's basically the same thing, isn't it? It's just a different character with a different perspective. It's just insert name A into tab B, but you're spot on. Yeah. I'd also say, did anyone get the vibe that this is kind of the place where they thought maybe they would start going down the love triangle route between Celine, Pride, and May? Did anyone else get that vibe, or is it just me because I know what's coming?
I didn't get it. I didn't pick that up.
No, not really. Celine is way too into, you know, worrying about Bray right now.
Yeah.
Because she's written off Pride as her main option for her new protector.
And Luke.
Because Luke's with Ellie.
Mm.
Which leaves, if Amber's out of the way, that leaves Bray.
I was actually going to say the one thing I do like about this is it's the first time that Celine is defending Bray, and not because she has a crush on him.
Yeah.
It's a nice, refreshing change.
It is a change, yeah.
Yeah, she's defending him because he's her leader and her friend and someone she cares about, you know, and it's been so long that we've had a moment where she cares about him in that way, where it's just, you know, like there was that brief time in season two right after Amber's death where her care for him really was, you're my friend and you're my leader and we were both mourning someone we lost. And, you know, it was just nice to see that this is where it's coming from. You know, it's not because, oh, I love Bray, you know, and she loves him, but it's become platonic. And I was like, that's nice that she can still do that for him, even though she's not romantically interested in him.
Mm.
I have to say, I do really like that May casts those doubts on Bray's ability as leader.
Yes.
I was just about to say, that May, come on, May, really?
Of
all people, you're trying to cast doubt on Bray's ability of being a leader. Really?
See, I wish it hadn't been May who said it, because it's not that she's not being, like, what she's saying isn't somewhat valid. We've made our own arguments about Bray's ability as a leader. But it doesn't work as well because we know the only reason May is doing this is because she's defending Pride.
Yes.
Like, otherwise, we know that May doesn't care what kind of leader Bray is.
No, not.
You know what I mean? Like, she wouldn't.
She doesn't care, but she isn't wrong.
Right. And see, that's like, for me, it doesn't work because the only reason May is saying these things is because Pride's being attacked. But she doesn't actually care about what choices Bray makes for the tribe. She does not care that what he did didn't get Trudy and Amber back.
Mm.
And if it were, any other situation where Pride wasn't being attacked or being pointed to as the reason Bray was gone, she likely would say almost the opposite, you know, of Bray's decision. So it's like, it doesn't hold any water that she's criticizing Bray. Even if, which, again, it's just like that moment when Ebony, May, and Lex were giving Trudy a hard time. It's not that it was wrong that somebody was giving her a hard time. It was just the people doing it didn't really have any right to, you know? And that's how I feel here, where it's just like, May, you don't care, okay? So this is just about protecting your dick in a glass case. That's all this is. So it doesn't matter that you're defending Pride by saying all these things about Bray. Because there are plenty of times when Bray has been making just as bad decisions objectively, and she would defend him, you know, because there was nothing on the line for her. She just says whatever she says. So it's just like, whatever, whatever. Everybody's making sense for who they are, but I don't think there's much I can dive into about like their points of view here.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, like both you and Sabine have said, that it's the perspective that they actually have this argument from. The person who's pointing it out is May, and like you say, she doesn't really care. And also, I think May is so cynical in her outlook as well. It would be the same as if you had Ebony or Lex do this, as opposed to if you had Alice or Dal or even Jack say these words.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, if Pride was the one who just, let's say it was Pride who'd made all the same choices that Bray did, we already know that May would be defending his choices. She certainly would not be criticizing these same choices if they were made by the guy she's into. So it's like, whatever.
And I guess that's maybe why they chose May to do this.
Yeah.
Because it's a point that needed to be made that, you know, there's something to say about Bray's choices, but it can't be made by someone whose opinion we actually respect.
Yeah.
In this matter, because that would make perfect Bray look bad. But someone needed to say it, so yeah, better let May do that, because her motives are no different.
I agree.
That makes sense.
If you think I'm going to jump when you snap your fingers, think again. I'd sooner snap your neck right now.
Well, go on. Do it. Sounds to me like you don't want to be rich. I could get you everything you ever wanted.
I mean, yeah, panel, what did you make of this power struggle on display here between Ned and Ebony in this episode?
Can you hear my eyes rolling? Maybe I'm not doing it hard enough. Okay, I'll start with some positives. I think the acting is good. I'll just say that. I think both Ned and Ebony, their acting is great. Pride's not the best, but he's not given the greatest stuff to work with. So I'm sorry, Nick, but you're doing nothing for me. But, you know, Bevan and Meryl are nailing what they have to do. But okay, is that all for the positives? Is that all I got? Yeah. That's all I got.
I want to say, I kind of sided with Ned. I never thought I would say that in my life, but I sided with Ned when he said to Pride, why do I need to tell you that? Where were you? You weren't at the party either. So I was like, yeah, that's a good point. What? Don't answer his question, Ned. He could have been, wait, no, now you're the kidnapper, but you know what I mean.
Oh, can you imagine, though, if it had been Pride?
Oh,
took Amber away.
Like a whole other level. They just would, like, they've destroyed his character enough, Sabine. Can you imagine if they added kidnap on top?
Yeah, he would just drag her back to the woods. Captured Eagle. Yes, he was happy in the woods, so.
I don't even know where to go on this topic, because, should we start with Ned threatening Ebony? How did you feel about that?
It's character consistency. This is Ned. Yeah. Every time he's upset, he throws a tantrum. That's how he handles his emotions. You know, so the minute like that he tries to use his physical prowess on her, you know, and Ebony was like, oh, really? Like, really? Go ahead. Do it then. I dare you. I wish a mother would, you know, and but she also knows I don't have to get physical with him. I can outwit him. He's a dumb ox, you know, but it just annoyed me. I was like, Ned's behavior in this episode just really makes me angry, because you're still trying to sell us on a love story, but you are making him the worst human being ever. Like you Thank were continuing you. To do that. He is so awful and hateful and cruel in this episode. And I will get into the abusive part later, but the fact that this is his, he's the one who did something wrong. He kidnapped two young women and clearly didn't even have a plan. Never shows any guilt or remorse or regret for having done it. Never struggles with the decision he did. When he gets caught, instead of showing any sort of humility, he just starts, he's just threatening people again. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm just like, why?
Yeah, literally, why?
Well, I suppose he's gone so far, he literally can't go back now, can he? He's boxed himself into this corner.
Even if he thinks he can't go back, as a writer, there's things you can still show a struggle for him. Like, he feels he's backed into a corner. But to show him to be what he is behaving like, that is purposeful. I'm not going to give this character
I completely agree.
Any depth. And I'm rooting for Ebony. You know what
I mean? I think we all are.
Literally.
This ginger menace in his place. I just...
Yeah.
Ebony, what are you waiting for? Put him in his place. I was literally screaming like, Ebony, come on, man. Put him in his place.
Does anyone actually think that Ebony... I know what's going to happen, but does anyone actually think that Ebony, at the slightest indication, is not going to rat him out the minute she can? Because he's crazy that he thinks that he can kind of trust her. I'd just run away if I was Ned at this point.
Like, I don't believe for a second this is going to work out for him because of who he's dealing with. But I don't feel bad for him because writers have given him nothing to empathize with, you know? And it's just like, I want him to pay for this, you know, because of the way they've written him and every opportunity they have to give him a little more depth, more character. Like, this is even a chance for us to find out what he thought he was going to gain out of this. And they just gloss over it of what his goal had been, you know, what his motives really were. And they just don't want him to have any of that. And yet at the same time, they're trying to sell a love story with him. And it's like, you're making everyone look dumber. Everyone who's involved in this, you're making them look dumber. You're making Alice look like a fool for being in love with this guy. You know, why would you do that?
I mean, I would also add that everybody who's come onto this podcast and spoken on this podcast has talked about opportunities that were out there to be had for the writing team, like you say, to make Ned a more sympathetic villain, to understand his motivations, to understand what Alice actually sees in him. And now we're getting to the tail end of his character. And rather than do that, rather than see him trying, sinking, failing, he's got himself into this situation that he cannot get out of, and then we see that actually he might not have been a bad person to begin with, but he's now kidnapped, like you say, kidnapped two defenseless women and locked them in a room, and they're at his mercy. Instead of giving us any sort of empathy for him or even to see it from his perspective, they're just doubling down on everything we've said for this entire time since you showed up. Every single person that's come onto this podcast has been negative about Ned. And to make him this, you know, bumbling antagonist that you just can't wait to get the comeuppance of is just, like, why are we wasting time on him? Why are we wasting time on Ned? And why is he here destroying Alice?
Yeah, why is Alice wasting her time on him?
Exactly. Because what is she seeing in him? They are showing us nothing that she could possibly be seeing in him. We don't see any of that.
And then, of course, you've got Pride, who has been dumbed down beyond belief. Like, the way he decides to go about his investigation. I remember a smarter Pride. A more clever Pride. The way he's questioning Ned and how quickly Ned, of all people, is able to get Pride off his game. Ned didn't even need Ebony to come in and save him because Ned had already made Pride speechless. Like, that is the saddest thing I have ever seen. That Ned was able to trip Pride up in his questioning. Ebony, you weren't even needed here. That's how dumb Pride is been made to be. You weren't necessary to get Ned out of this. Because Pride's an idiot. And
it's actually more suspicious that Ebony came in to help Ned.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because you'd be like, hang on, wait, what? Since when have you two stood up for each other?
And since when does Ebony defend anyone that isn't brave?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
She'd defend anybody without an ulterior motive is what it comes down
that's
to.
The point.
I would immediately be suspicious if she was defending somebody. Like, okay, I'm going to look harder at this person.
What did they do? She's hiding something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, come on. Mm.
And honestly, Ebony would be my suspect number one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because your mind would go immediately, oh, Ebony has orchestrated this and she's got Ned to carry it out because he's the brute strength.
Mm-hmm. I mean, version of Pride would not antagonize people he's trying to get answers out of, first of all, and would have been much more sly in the questions he was asking because he wouldn't want you to know he's investigating you or that he suspects you. You know, like, you're going to get on the defensive. And I feel like an earlier Pride would be much more sharper in being able to avoid being tripped up by something like, well, you weren't here either. I wasn't in the building. It's like, Pride, you stepped right into that one.
He would have been observant.
He would have been. Or he would have shut his mouth and simply followed the people he was suspicious of.
Yeah.
Just follow them around and see what they're doing with their time, where they're going. I'm embarrassed for you, Pride.
Yeah, because the way Pride was originally written, he would be able to follow anyone without them noticing that he was doing that.
Yeah, good point.
So why does he suddenly magically lose that ability when Amber's gone?
But it's worse than that, isn't it? Because we've seen this dumbing down of characters all throughout season three. I mean, I know we always bring Alice up, but she's like a great example of taking a really competent, capable character and just turning all the levels down to like zero. And that's essentially what they've done to Pride as well.
I mean, I know why Pride is dumb. I know why Pride's character was ruined as quickly as it was. He could not look like a better choice for Amber, okay? They could not let him stay as cool as they introduced him as, because then we'd be like, you're choosing Bray over that guy? What's wrong with you, Amber? She can't have a better choice. Bray has got to be the ultimate. And so obviously her ex has to be turned into a bumbling idiot. You know what I mean? Like, I get it, but it's, oh my gosh.
Annoying.
It's so sad. It's so pathetic. No wonder Nick was like, I hate this. I hate this so much. I hated every minute of it. It started off great. I got her like three episodes. That was pretty awesome.
I mean, those questions I was going to ask, like, does Ned know about Ebony? I was watching this scene earlier and I was like, does he actually know Ebony in her past? Because the way he's acting doesn't quite match up. Like, it's acting like he knows everything when she doesn't even know him. He doesn't know her. You see what I mean? Like, this information has come out of nowhere.
I would chalk that up to the fact that, okay, think about it. The average person, if they had found out what Ned was doing, they simply would have ratted on him. The fact that she didn't, the fact that she not only kept quiet about what he'd done, but she replaced his note, I think it makes sense that Ned is suspicious of Ebony, even if he doesn't know who Ebony is. Because what she's done is crazy suspicious and untrustworthy. You know, because who the heck else in the mall would have done this if they caught Ned? You know, I would be suspicious of her too. Even if I was dumb as Ned is, I would be like, that's messed up. What do you want? What are you going to try to get from me? How are you going to try to blackmail me? Because that's what you're doing. And I don't trust you. So I think it does make sense that he's suspicious of her, even if he doesn't know anything about her. What he does know is that's what she was willing to do when she found out he's clearly the kidnapper.
Look, Jack was a pretty popular guy around here. He left because of you.
Yeah, I don't need reminding, Alice.
It's gonna take more than I'm sorry before people stop baking Luke blueberry pies.
Alice, look, I don't expect you to understand, but I'd like to think I could still share things with you, like we used to. You are the only sister I've got.
the relationship between the two sisters has been very strained lately. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this latest moment between them?
I don't like it.
I kind of liked the character work when Alice was blatantly concerned about Ellie learning the truth of her relationship with Ned when she had built up to be something that it wasn't, and how she kept looking over at Ellie and trying to minimize what was being said, and how she was trying to be like, oh, we're really close, and then, oh, well, I don't actually know where he is. And I thought that was kind of interesting because we saw that a little bit back in season two with Lex and Alice, when Alice was waiting for Lex to kind of ask her out because she thought that was the next thing that he was going to logically do. And I thought maybe there was a little bit of the old Alice there, but not really in this scene at all. But I just thought that was an interesting bit of acting between Vanessa and Jennifer, how Ellie looked more and more awkward as it became apparent to her that what her sister had just said was not true. And she was kind of shifting on the sofa bed thing, and she physically looked like she gave her a smile like, oh, okay. And it just felt really uncomfortable, and I liked the way they both played it.
I think one of the things I did like was that, you know, Ellie gets a bit of perspective. Just the little thing that people will need time to forgive her, to not see her as the reason Jack left, you know?
I mean, I think to be fair, that was one of the things that she was concerned about. Not necessarily with Jack leaving, but with how it was going to play with the other tribe when her relationship with Luke came out.
Which, you know, makes sense.
But you're right, that kind of feels like a little bit of the sort of advice that Alice would have given her in season two.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, I just like that they managed to at least put that in there to give us that little bit. As for Alice trying to hide how things really are between her and Ed, yeah.
It's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary.
And Alice so deserves more than this. Everybody thinks she deserves more than this. Probably everybody in that mall knows she deserves more than this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it is baffling at this point why she's continuing with this relationship. Because it makes Alice seem like the saddest sack that's ever come into the mall. And, I mean, she shares the living space with Celine. So we know that that is not the case, right?
So, like, it makes Celine look good in comparison.
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't understand why they're doing this to her. Because, it boggles the mind. Alice is not only... I mean, Alice is a hot piece of ass. Let's be real. She mm-hmm. is. Look at her, right? She's capable. She's hot. Who wouldn't want her? Why is she hanging around with this guy that doesn't respect her and is borderline just... demented? Why is she with him?
Honestly, I always felt kind of offended by that, because it feels like, because of Alice being, you know, a bigger girl mm-hmm. in this, it's like they're making fun of that. Like, oh, yes, he has to settle for someone like Ned.
Yes.
Because that's all he'll ever be able to get. And it just feels mean, but that's combined with how they made jokes about, like, Lex with his... oh, I wish someone would take Alice.
Yeah.
It's like they've always, you know, it's great to see someone like her in a show like this, but just the little hints of, you know, making fun of her because of her size.
Yeah.
Seems to be a part of, at least that's how it comes across to me, that...
You're not wrong.
It feels like that's why they paired her with someone like Ned.
I was just going to mention about how they treated Ryan. They kind of mm-hmm. treated Ryan in a similar kind of way. And Ryan was kind of like the only plus size guy. And they kind of treated him in the same way that they treated Alice. And there's this assumption when in reality, someone like Lex, who would literally have sex with a door if it was mm-hmm. left unattended, there is absolutely no way that he would not be a rat up a drainpipe when it came to Alice, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he thought she was into him... he would be there.
I'll admit, the one thing you guys said that's positive is that it is that subtlety of Alice trying to hide from her sister that things aren't great. And you get the sense that Ellie is picking up on that and But otherwise, I don't like the scene. I don't like the storytelling of it. I don't like that the narrative is basically telling us that Ellie is the only one who should apologize or make peace. She is making all the efforts to connect with her sister. It doesn't make sense to me that Alice would not also apologize. And even physically, it's Ellie who's moving closer to her sister, trying to close the gap between them, even though she was not the only one who was wrong in their last fight. They both said cruel things to each other. They were both wrong in how they handled that situation. And yet Ellie's the only one who's trying to fix it. She's the one who came to the room. She's the one who immediately apologized. Alice has nothing to say to that except to accept the apology. Like, what? You have nothing to apologize to your sister for? Because I can think of a lot of things you should be apologizing to your little sister for. And it's Ellie who is trying to make peace and show that she accepts this relationship. And Alice has nothing to give in return. She doesn't make a single overture towards her little sister. I hate this. Because it's just that narrative saying that Ellie is somehow just this horrible villain of the story and everyone should be mad at her because she doesn't freaking love Jack anymore. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I hate this scene because it encompasses.
They keep reinforcing that, don't they?
Yeah, that entire message.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they both had a fight. They both said terrible things to each other. They were both wrong. And then the old Alice would have totally apologized. I get that Ellie was the first to do it. That might be the dynamic between siblings sometimes. You're waiting for the other one to stop being mad. And when they show that you can approach them, then you can approach them. So Ellie coming and saying, I'm sorry. You could see that Alice was just waiting for her little sister's temper to go down before, like, you know, so am I or whatever. But I really freaking hate the whole visual storytelling of this. And just like, Ellie shouldn't be doing all the work to try and reconnect these two. Alice definitely needs to do her fair share because she is just as much in the wrong for the severance of this relationship, if not more in the wrong. And yeah, I just, it makes it hard for me to have empathy for Alice in the scene.
It's everything you just said, Liz, but it's even worse than that because it's actually Alice who goes into Ellie's room.
Yeah.
And then Alice just sits and waits for Ellie to approach her and apologize. It makes it even worse. Like, why is Alice being framed as the one in the right here? Like, she hasn't done and said anything bad to Ellie. Like, I don't like how it's framed at all. It's horrible.
I know I say this every time I'm on here, but let's not forget that this whole situation was essentially started by Alice. She was the one who said, hey, I think that blue-haired guy has a thing for you, Ellie. Why don't you go over and try and make things easier for the tribe?
Nope, that's just swept under the carpet. We're supposed to forget
Never
that.
Never taken any responsibility for that.
We already know how Alice feels about that. She said it in the last episode. Yeah, I told you to come on to him. I didn't tell you to fall for him. Yeah, that's her attitude, that it's Ellie's fault that she caught feelings for the guy that her sister kept pushing her towards. Even when Ellie was like, I don't want to do this anymore, Alice guilted her into continuing. You know what I mean? Like, so this scene just encompasses all of that and makes me angry. As Lance just pointed out, Alice approaches her sister as though she's waiting for the apology she deserves. But she got nothing to offer back. Like, oh, okay. And I'm supposed to feel bad because, as the next subject will go into, I'm supposed to feel bad. And I'm just like, you know what? I've had it.
Yeah. And getting back to your comment about Alice saying that you weren't supposed to fall for him. The thing is, there's a whole gulf of experience between Alice and Ellie. Alice has always protected Ellie from the harsher elements of the world in which they live. Alice has a lot more experience, or at least we're told she's got a lot more experience dealing with boys and men. And Ellie's first real relationship was with Jack. And the idea that a person like that could then understand that there are some things you have to play pretend and then, you know, annex off your feelings. How would she know how to do that? She has so little experience in romantic relationships. How would she know how to do that? Most adults don't know how to do that.
Like Alice to apologize too. Like, you know, I'm even admit, you know, like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. And I just reiterate that her concerns about Luke, because they are correct concerns for her to have, but at least take some accountability. Like, I never thought this is where it would go, and I shouldn't have put you in that position, and I'm worried for you. You know, like, just, this should be reciprocal.
you know? And I, again, it just feels like it's the narrative that's like, no, Alice doesn't have to apologize because Ellie's terrible. So she should be apologizing and she should be making all the, overtures to make things right. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done with you, season three. I'm so done with you. I would be happy season one by now.
So what I'm taking away from this is, you know how we had those range of Danny t-shirts? So now we need, Alice, you must apologize to your sister. And we also need to add Justice for Ellie, season three.
Oh, God. I don't know if I'd go that far.
I
wouldn't
go that far. let's not go crazy now.
Like, Danny was done, like, so raw dog. Danny deserves t-shirts. Ellie just deserves an apology from her sister.
I mean, yeah, at this point, this is Alice now. I mean, she
it's horrible.
Threw Patsy and Chloe under the bus. She threw her sister under the bus. This is her. We have to accept that now.
Watch out, Brady. You'll be next. Watch out, girl. Keep your eyes peeled.
Poor thing.
Take it serious that she's concerned for her sister when all of her actions say the opposite.
Yeah.
Like when she says that her problem is that she's concerned about Ellie being with someone like Luke and how dangerous that is for her and what kind of life will she have. It's hard to take that seriously when I've had to watch her just throwing people into the grinder for an entire season and feeling zero remorse or regret or even second thoughts on her actions the whole time. Yeah. Like, it's one thing to make bad choices. You're going to make them. These were desperate situations. But at the very least, you could have had Alice feel bad about them. You know, like, oh man, the girls, they trusted us. We didn't protect them. We talked them into being despised. Now they're both gone. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't tell me you care about your sister's well-being with this guy because your actions don't support it.
Yeah.
So, you know, good on you, Ellie, for apologizing, trying to make peace. And the harsh reality of you're not going to be a favorite around here right now, you know, because that's what happens with breakups, especially if two people break up and they share a friend group or family. It's going to be awkward for everybody. And that's just reality of your choice. It sucks, but that is reality. You can't expect people to be thrilled for breaking up the dream team because now they're put in an awkward position. She needed to hear that. That's very true. But otherwise, you know what? Whatever. Get out my face with this crap. This is terrible storytelling.
Meanwhile.
Hey, Lex. You haven't forgotten lunch for the Guardian, have you?
Me? Forget? No chance.
I really appreciate your help in this.
No problem.
It's a real act of love. But more than that, it proves to me that you've come to terms with the problem. I'm proud of you, Lex.
So yeah, just generally, what do you make of Lex's efforts with the Guardian?
I hate this. I hate it. Because we had an opportunity to frame Lex in a different way. And, oh my God, it just underscores the lack of growth that there has been for him, I would say, since season two, where he had so much growth. This is where Lex will start to stagnate. And it will just get worse and worse through each season. This is my opinion only. Other people may think different things. And also, it again underscores what an idiot Tysanne is. Because the Guardian's been lying to her this entire time. And now her husband is lying to her. And it's just like, you're a moron. And you've had no growth at all. And it's just reset back to who you were in the beginning. And it's such a shame because we had an opportunity to frame him in a different way. And yeah, it's just another missed opportunity.
Yeah, I think Lex's last moment of growth is when he and his wife said, we won't let anybody come between us. Like, that was his last moment he gets to show any kind of growth or character development. And from then on, he will just be this guy forever. That's pretty much it.
It's so disappointing.
I did like Caleb's performance, his body language, his regret of letting his wife talk him into this. And you can see he's internally responding, like reminding himself, I love my wife. I love my wife. I don't want to fight with her. I can feed this guy. I can do it. I don't expect it to be easy. I don't expect him to be patient. Caleb's kind of funny.
Yeah, he just nails the look of, okay, I just have to do it for my wife.
Mm.
Meanwhile, my brain goes to, okay, he has to do it for his wife, otherwise he'll be sleeping on the couch. But but for him to blackmail Andy like that, it just, it feels very season one Lex.
The only thing I can say about the blackmail that kind of works is that Lex doesn't know he's putting Andy in a dangerous position, because he doesn't believe Andy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't actually believe that the Guardian's dangerous. His wife has been able to convince him and everybody else that the Guardian is harmless. Good job, Tysan. But anyway, so he actually, he thinks he's being mischievous at at worst. Like, that's what he honestly thinks. Like, at worst, he's just signing, he's blackmailing this kid into doing a tedious task, but not like a dangerous one, you know? So in a way, it kind of works there. It does suck for Andy, though. Like, nobody believes him.
He's like the new Chloe.
And the difference is, Chloe wasn't very clear about the things that Trudy was doing to her. You know, she would just say, she's weird, she's different. But she wouldn't tell people the specific things Trudy was literally doing to her. Where Andy is, he's not hiding anything. He's not being vague. He's being straightforward with every single person he tells that this is what he said to me, this is what he did to me, and nobody's listening to him. So I actually feel worse for Andy. Like, he's literally telling everybody who will listen to him, and nobody believes him. Everybody writes him off.
Yeah, and I guess that's the sad part for him. It's like, the others, they don't know Andy well enough to know whether that he's, you know, they can't decipher if he's just a scared kid who's, you know, just making this up, or who's, it's just his imagination, you know.
Hmm.
They don't know if it's his imagination or if this is a child that actually speaks the truth.
Yeah. His twin sister doesn't believe him. She should know Andy. She should know when he's actually scared about something or genuine, you know? And even she wrote him off. Like, he has nobody who will listen to him. And he's telling everybody.
To be fair, though, to the other Mallrats, all we have really seen of Andy is that he's a baby scammer. Like, his brother is Ned. He spends all of his time with KC. They've always got some sort of racket on the go. So all that, they don't, like you say, Sabine, they actually don't know much about Andy at all. And what they have seen is that he's basically a bit of a liar and a scammer. So, like, why would they believe him?
His own sister, his twin.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with the twin part. Yeah, I do agree with that. I'm just, from the perspective of the other Mallrat, I can see why they don't believe him. But then that argument falls down when it comes to Tally.
Get people not believing him. I do get it. I just feel awful for him. Because he is telling everybody who give him an ounce, give him a moment, he tells them. He's not hiding what he knows, and nobody is listening to him. You know, they're even poking fun at him, like, oh, you silly little boy. But, like, even his own sister, somebody who should know him more than anybody in the world, can't tell when her brother is genuinely afraid. Like, this poor kid. It sucks. I'm sorry, Andy. I'm so sorry.
All right, let's do this. So, not knowing why Ned has been acting so grumpy lately, Alice enlists Casey's help to organize a surprise to cheer him up.
These are my great-great-grandparents.
Alice, I can't take this. It's irreplaceable.
But if it gets me what I want today, what do you say?
What is it you want?
I've made a list. I need everything delivered here by 2:30.
Okay.
So, what did you think of the date and Casey's role in it?
Can I just say, I think Casey should be an event planner. I think if this scams and low-level criminal activity doesn't work out for him, he needs to go into event planning and staging sort of like wedding photography, because that boat was chef's kiss. He did a great job there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not going to, like, talking around the date at this point, Casey rocked that and he's got a future ahead of him.
He has shown to be so capable of doing this, like with Ryan and Celine and the whole Venice.
He is more resourceful than anyone.
He's very.
I tell you.
The most resourceful character in the entire show.
Yeah.
He's got this whole big future of photography staging ahead of him.
Casey is the MVP. He's the MVP, and he's the only thing that saves
any of this subject that we're talking about. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. let's just give him his flowers. Casey is amazing. I did love that scene between he and Alice. I thought that was beautiful, especially when you think of like just where they've been in their relationship and they get to have this tender moment where she trusts him, asks for his help. And Casey is just like, we're friends, we're family. I'm not taking something valuable from you. Mm. When this means so much to you, I'll figure it out. She gave him a time it needed to be done today. Yeah. You know what I mean? And clearly that list was ridiculous because we see the date and you're like, you needed him to get all of that by the afternoon before dinner, Alice. Are you serious? And that is a gorgeous scene. It's so sweet. And I'm just like, I have been saying it since Casey showed up. He is amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is why I would not take any abuse towards this kid. You know what I mean? I've been singing his praises because I was just like, have you watched him in the 3 seasons he was around? Casey was amazing. Okay.
And we've gone from talking about a lack of grace with Lex. And KC is the flip of that, because KC's had so much character growth that when he refused to take that locket / watch, I couldn't quite see what it was, you totally believed it. It didn't feel out of character. I knew that he wasn't going to take it, even though I couldn't remember it. And that's great writing. And that's, like you say, why KC is a brilliant character.
Okay, to the crap, now that we've gotten the one shining thing out of the way. So basically, the show not only wants me to accept that Alice is dead and gone, they also want me to accept that she's going to put up with an abusive relationship and be the kind of woman who, when her partner is being abusive toward her, whenever he's in a mood, there's no rhyme or reason, she is going to scramble to please him in some way. This is supposed to be sweet and romantic, and I do not see that, because what made her want to do this for Ned was him treating her like crap on the bottom of his shoe because he's in a bad mood. And that is literally how he works. And the fact that Alice would put up with someone treating her that way, and you want me to believe there's anything about this man that she loves other than the fact that he gives her attention when he's in a good mood? Like, that's it. That's literally all there is. Ned gives her attention when he's in a good mood. And when he's in a bad mood, he treats her like scum. But Alice is deeply in love with him. You know what? Screw you, show. Screw you. You cannot ruin her anymore. You've reached the bottom of the barrel. She's now in an abusive relationship. And
it's so toxic.
The worst part of that is that they tried to make us believe that that's what she deserves.
She should be happy with this.
Yeah.
Yes, she should be happy because girls like Alice should be happy with whatever they can get, right?
Yeah.
Whatever scraps.
That's what it feels like, yeah.
It's so negative. It's so toxic. It's such a bad message to send to young people. It's just the worst messaging. I mean, when I was last on here, we had that negative messaging about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got this negative about putting up with this this low treatment. Like you say, Liz, it is abusive. Like you say, Sabine, it's the vibe is that this is the best that Alice could get, so she should just be happy with that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, when Alice came in, when she was, you know, strong, fierce, amazing Alice.
Yeah.
She was such a good role model and such a positive, you know, person to watch for girls that look like her, someone to look up to, and to see her being turned to this, it just hurts. And I'm pretty sure it must have had an impact on a lot of girls that, okay, you know, I recognize myself in Alice, so apparently this is what my life should be and what I should accept. It's insane.
Yeah, especially when you think about how much Alice owned her sexuality. She owned her body. She was confident. Yeah, she had moments of doubt with Lex where she felt like, no, of course he wouldn't want me. But when she first came in, I mean, the first scenes that we get of her in season one is her openly flirting with him.
Yeah.
And I mean, exactly. How have we come this far to make it that Ned?
Yeah, it's like every little bit of confidence she had in herself has been kicked out of her. Mm. It's like it's been reduced to this little low opinion of herself that she feels the need to put up with things like this. She feels the need to crawl for Ned, to beg him for his attention.
And you know what really makes me mad about that? Is even when she had a thing for Lex and, you know, convinced herself that he felt the same, and you were like, oh, sweetie, you know, she still didn't put up with Lex treating her like crap.
No.
Like, Lex was good to Alice. He was kind to Alice. He was more sensitive toward her than he was anybody else. You know, when he acted up, she put him in his place. He apologized for being rude to her or snapping at her or saying something he shouldn't have said to her. You know what I mean? Like, they get into a fight. She goes out to the barn. The only reason why Lex is there is because he knows he was in the wrong and comes to apologize to her. That's how they make up. He doesn't treat her like garbage and she just takes it because she has a crush on him. You know what I mean? Like, so to paint her like this, it's disgusting.
I mean, this, going back to the Lex-Alice situation, I mean, I think Alice is the only woman that Lex ever treats with the modicum of respect.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't even treat Tysanne with that level of respect, because we've just seen in the previous scene that he just, even though he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't want to lie to his wife, but he is going to lie to his wife and he's going to take her for a mug. And, you know, he didn't necessarily do that so much with Alice. I think he respected her as much as Lex can ever respect any woman.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah, he saw her as an equal.
Yeah, yeah, he did. He saw her as an equal.
And when he messed up, he felt genuinely guilty for letting her down, even if she wasn't around to see what he might be doing. He'd be like, oh, I can't do that because if Alice finds out, you know what I mean? Like, he cared. But then again, that season two, the writing was better. Characters were better. Mm. So, like, there's just that. But yeah, just writing her to be abused all morning by the person who claims to love her and care about her. And that influences her to not call him out, not put him in the doghouse where he clearly belongs. No, that's an insult to dogs. All right. Instead, it makes her go, I have to do something to cheer him up. Like, are you serious?
Mm.
Like, why are you teaching young audiences that this is how you, like, I don't know what they were going for here. Is it just so we feel sorry for Alice? Because that's not how you do this. Okay.
No.
Like, that's not how you get the audience to just be like, oh, poor Alice. She likes this guy so much and he's so mean. Like,
No, because there was real sympathy. You had real sympathy for Alice during the days when she was in love with Lex and he wasn't interested. It felt like you could totally empathize with her because the signals that he was sending out were so confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could understand, like, I get why she is trying to dress like Zandra. It is a car crash. When you see it, it's horrible. You feel so bad for her because she's gone and done the exact thing that she shouldn't have done. And that is a really great way of making you feel sorry for her. And in the same time, you also kind of feel sorry for Lex, because does he think this is a joke? Is she taking the piss out of Zandra? Like, what is this? But like you say, in this situation, like, you would have to be a moron to feel sorry for Alice in this situation, because what you really feel is, get away from him, girl. Run.
What's wrong with you? Like, if you want us to feel sympathy for the character, we have to understand why Alice would even be trying to make it work with someone who treats her like this. You know, it'd be different if Ned actually apologized. He has the nerve to walk into the room and be like, how's my girl? Like, no acknowledgement of how he's been treating her. And she's just like, it's my Ned. You know, and it's like, how are you supposed to feel sorry for someone who comes across that dumb?
And it is the playbook of an abuser as well, to go from nasty comments, nasty behavior, to then being, oh, you know, everything is fine. And let's, you know, you are right. This is an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm. He lumps bombs her, then he abuses her. And Alice, for some reason, his abuse, there's way too much of it. There's just way too much abuse for her to reasonably put up with it, especially when we've seen how she has been presented before. It, again, as much as I joke about, oh, the Alice we love is dead, they can't ignore that Alice was never that person. She was not that person who would have put up with this.
Yeah.
You know, who would have been unable to recognize that this is not okay for someone to treat her this way. And he's been doing it from the minute he walked into her life. And if you have to count up, let's just do checks and balances of the times he's been good to Alice and the times he has been horrible to Alice, they do not balance.
Mm.
No, I was just going to say, there's just not enough love bombing to balance out the abuse that we could at least be like, all right, it's believable maybe that she could fall into this abusive relationship, because anybody can. Let's just make that clear. It's not a lack of character or a weakness in you as a person if you find yourself being abused. But if you're going to present that story, you have to do it realistically. You know, people do not immediately fall into an abusive relationship because their abuser starts the relationship by smacking them. You know what I mean? Their abuser starts the relationship by showering them with love. And then the abuse creeps in, because nobody's going to walk into a face slap. Okay. And so if you want to tell that story, you have to make Ned be good to her at first and then slowly let the abuse creep in, if that's the story you're trying to tell. But you can't have him be a douchebag for the whole beginning of the relationship, give her a night or two of being a decent guy, douchebag again, decent guy. Like, sorry, that doesn't work for me. It doesn't work.
So I just want to pick up on two things. The first thing is, I want to pick up on what Sabine said about Alice being the only plus size main character, female main character that we have. And I want to say, I wonder if a lot of this is how the writers actually feel about Alice. And it's their own sort of prejudices about her and about her body that are seeping into this. The other question I want to ask is, was the intention when they wrote this scene to write it as an abusive scene? Or were the writers not thinking that at all?
So hard to give them credit, you know? Like, I want to think, okay, if I was writing, what would I be going for? But they keep fumbling the ball and leave us with our, just throwing our hands up in the air. Like, what were you going for? You know, so I can't really give them credit for knowing what they were doing with Alice and Ned, because it's just a cluster. Like, I don't believe you knew what you were doing with Alice and Ned.
Well, the reason why I asked that other question, which is, do we think the writers were intentionally writing abusive relationship, is because there's this horrible thing in the back of my mind that they actually don't think they were, even though they actually were. And that is the most horrifying thing of all, that anyone could commit this to paper and not see it as abuse.
Exactly. Again, they did an abusive relationship better in season one between Lex and Zandra. Like, they seemed to be aware that this was abusive, that this was toxic. You know, and they were careful how they could show that Zandra would still be in love with someone like this, who was so clearly emotionally abusive to her and verbally abusive to her. You know, they were very careful of showing just how good Lex could be. And also, it reflected what Zandra wanted out of a partner, what she was looking for in the world, the safety she wanted, not to mention compounded by the survival situation they were all in. It worked. They thought about it. You know, so you at least get it. You look at them and you say they're toxic and he's horrible to her, but you're not like, Zandra's just a freaking moron. You understand how she ended up in this relationship with this guy, with the world ending. But this with Alice and Ned, I don't believe much thought was put into it at all. I think Sabine probably is right. They look at Alice, see a plus size actress, and say, this is all she freaking deserves.
For me personally, I mean, I was that teenage girl that size, you know. It's the amount of times I've had people tell me in my life that I should just accept whatever, or I should just be grateful for any attention. It's what plays at the back of my mind watching this.
That's really interesting.
You know, For me, as a teenager, this confirmed what people around me were telling me, that, oh, you're that size, you're not entitled to actual happiness, you should just be grateful. And it's the mental health part that goes with that is a pathway that could lead someone who was previously seen, as we saw Alice in season 2, to go down a path with an awful guy like Ned.
And that was part of the reason why Alice was such a great role model in season 2, because yeah. She came on the scene confident and knowing her worth, you know, and saying like, I'm beautiful. Like she had her moments of insecurity, like, but they felt like normal insecurity of a teenage girl, you know, like I want to look pretty for the boy I like, you know, and the girls treated her just like any other girl. And Alice's attitude is, I won't take any crap because I don't deserve crap. You know, I deserve nice things. I should have nice things. And that is empowering. So to turn her into this, like she doesn't realize, she doesn't recognize any of this. Like, are you serious?
How my mind could go to Alice would be like this is if they would have actually showed us the crap the Chosen would have put the Mallrats through, you know? If they'd done some brainwashing or attacked their mental health some way, I could get why this would be a response from her.
And you know what, Sabine, that would have been awesome.
Unfortunately, we never saw that.
Like, that actually would be really awesome if that was purposeful in Alice's storyline, being beat down, being... because, like, the Guardian did it once with her in season 2 when she's trapped before Ebony rescues her, and he's mocking her because of what happened with Lex and Tysan, because, you know, Trudy had told him. And we see how much that hurts, that the two people she loved so much did this to her and betrayed her. If they had kept playing on that insecurity, you know, playing on that hurt, pulling that string, then I could buy Alice ending up with the one guy who's willing to give her attention, even if he's a total dick cheese. But that's not the story they were ever trying to tell with Alice.
Nope.
And that could have actually been useful to an audience watching. How do you end up going from being confident and strong and believing in yourself to ending up with an abusive dick, you know? But they, no thought.
I was just going to say, so I was also like you, Sabine, I was a plus size teenager, plus size person now. I was more like Alice in season 1, where I felt very confident and I felt like, I, you know, my body did not dictate what I could be allowed to do or have in the world, and that I didn't have to just put up with the sort of scraps. So for me, seeing her end up like this was very disappointing, and it is very disheartening because, like you say, there were so few role models that looked like either of us on TV at this time. And I saw Alice, that very much reminded me of myself with her confidence. And then I saw her kind of get reduced. And it felt like, no, like you say, you can't have anything, which is just a lie. It's just misogyny at the most, you know, prevalent level. It's disgusting. And yeah, I completely agree with what you've said, that this is just the writer's blatant misogyny and fat shaming coming through when it comes to the body of a woman.
Yeah.
There are people who think it is not the responsibility of a TV show, media, just in general, to be role models for children. And I do agree with that in some way. Like, don't, you know, Madonna shouldn't be your role model. You should be your child's role model, whatever. But inclusivity is so important. And this is something people miss all the time. They don't understand why it matters. Like, they'll, you know, they'll like, well, why does Iron Man have to be this? I never saw him as a white guy. You know what I mean? Like, and they don't get it because they have been what is considered the norm.
Yeah.
Or the standard or the default their whole life. They don't know what it's like to not be the default. I never had any issues really with my weight, but I am a Black girl and I have grown up in a white environment my entire life. And I can tell you, growing up, I knew I wasn't the default. I knew that I was the exclusion. And so every book I read as a child, I was the character who was definitely going to be described by the color of my skin. None of the other color characters were, but I was. You know, it was always made very blatantly clear to me that I wasn't the norm. I was the exception, and I should be happy to be included. If I was watching a TV show aimed at young adults, I wasn't going to get the hot guy. You know, my character wasn't ever going to get that. So, and because I grew up in an environment with just, you know, mostly white people. Obviously, all my boyfriends are white. And I was desperate to see that reflected, you know, to see my reality reflected in a positive way on the screen. Mm-hmm. So every TV show or movie that showed a black girl and a white guy in a happy relationship meant the world to me, even if the show was garbage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my best friend and I, our favorite show when we were kids was this crap show out of Canada called 15. And you want to know why it was our favorite show? Because they had a black girl and a white girl who were best friends. And that was literally the only media we had that reflected our reality. And those two characters were horrible people, but we were just so happy to see our reality. So when people don't get it, they don't understand why it is so important to see yourself reflected positively on the screen and to have writers be so irresponsible and crap on your representation this way.
Yeah.
It'd be different if Alice wasn't the only plus size female character. You know what I mean? It'd be like, oh, she's just one of them who ends up in a crappy relationship, but she's literally the only one.
Yeah.
It matters how you treat her and what you do with her story. You know,
and she's not just the only one in this show. She was at that time the only one in all of the shows aimed at that age.
I don't want to talk about these two anymore. I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm done today.
No, you guys summed it all up. So
Lance was like, "Pop off."
All right, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
Can't say. Now, this is a guy who knows absolutely nothing about making decisions. And you know why? It's because KC lives by his wits day.
Yeah, panel, how did you react to Bray's out-of-character coping mechanism and being caught by the mosquitoes?
It feels like Bray's rock bottom acting like Lex.
Okay, let me jump in and start. I did not like this. I really did not like and appreciate this scene. When Bray lost the love of his life on a mountain when she blew up, even then he returned to the tribe, yeah? Because he wanted to honor her memory. Now when the love of his life and the mother of his niece and his unborn child are just kidnapped. He's not sure where they are. He's in a bar with a random girl drinking. This isn't Bray. This is not Bray. And I really didn't appreciate it.
I mean, the with a random girl part, I get.
I love how she was just sitting there for all the drinks she could get out of him. I love that. That was the most realistic thing of all.
Yep.
Okay.
Bray running away isn't a problem, but Bray doing this is a problem.
I agree with Lance. Bray
drinking is a problem.
That tonally, this is all wrong. Like, I think tonally, I don't know why they're going for comedic. This is serious. Bray has had a breakdown. He hit the end of his rope and jumped, okay? This shouldn't be a joke. And they're clearly going for comedic, and I don't know why that's the tone they would take for a guy who's literally at the bottom of a well of despair. Like, why is this funny? Like, when they first show him on, you know, sleeping on the pier, waking up, the tone is fine. That makes sense. Like, it's meant to show you this is how bad it is, that this is where Bray is. He didn't even go home. He slept in the street, you know, and that's how dark things are for him. I don't know why. You can direct your actors. So I can't help but feel that Dwayne was directed to play this in such a comedic way.
Definitely,
I shouldn't be laughing. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed myself, but I agree, Lance. This is all wrong, the way this is done. You can still show that Bray has hit rock bottom to the point where instead of actually going back to tackle this as he would have in the past, he can't even manage to do that. He's getting drunk in a bar. But you'd have to, the staging just needs to be different. You could have the girl hanging on to him and he's indifferent to her attention. Mm-hmm. Like she's just taking advantage of his drunken state. Or, you know, but having him making all these jokes and being funny and the fact that poor Ari can't stop laughing,
how many, it's like, why is this the tone you chose to go for? We're supposed to feel sorry for Bray.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the completely wrong tone.
The only thing that, you know, it doesn't even make sense, but that I found funny in that was that, okay, he feels like he's lost Amber again. And where is he? He's with another woman.
Mm.
It's like, it feels like that's his way to cope with, you know, with being so overwhelmed by his emotions. It's, he seeks the company of other women, but...
And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Him being so happy is just, ugh, it's annoying.
I know that Casey was laughing towards the end, but in the beginning when he first saw Bray, did anyone clock the sort of look of disappointment that went across his face before he actually came over?
He's concerned. Yeah. Like, holy crap, this is the last place I expected to find you. You know?
Out of everyone?
And I'm not
and
saying
especially
that...
when you think about what their relationship has been like, where Bray has always made a point of pointing out that Casey lacks something, like Casey is not trustworthy and Casey is a coward, and Casey isn't any of those things, but Bray never misses an opportunity to talk Casey down. And so I felt like Casey, to find him there, like you say, is the last place that he would expect to find him. And there's that look of this pseudo adult who he kind of has always been expected to look up to, even though necessarily he hasn't, because him and Lex have always thought that Bray was a prat, but that he would be there in this bar drinking like that. And also the way he speaks to Casey, like, Casey's never had any feelings towards anything, he's got no principles, he doesn't care. Now, yes, season one that was true, but season three, Casey, that's not the case. That's not who he is.
Even in season one, he had principles.
Yeah, but now we know that like, Casey is not the person that Bray is describing. And it just kind of makes, like, at first it was funny. And then I was angry. I was angry for Casey because I was like, yeah, everybody lets you down. They treat you like this.
I think the only reason I can understand Casey laughing a bit is more to see even the mighty Bray.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it came
falls like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's because he finds the situation utterly ridiculous, which it is.
I mean, there's so many times you could have, if you wanted to show a comedic Bray getting drunk, letting loose, plenty of times they could have done that. And it could be funny, like, oh, wow, look at Bray. You know, he finally loosened his corset, you know. But this is not the time to poke fun at what he's supposed to be going through. Again, all of this could still be happening, but your tone has to be different. Your staging has to be different. You can't have a scene where Bray is making all these jokes and being so funny, ha ha ha, the kind of thing that a child would think is hilarious when someone pretends to be drunk, have him hanging on some strange girl, like, and get the sympathy of the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, the audience is just like, Bray, what are you doing? You're supposed to be upset that your baby mom is gone and your niece's mother is gone and your child is gone. And this is what you did for refuge. Like, you can still have him in that bar, despondent and just drinking it all away, and still have a girl there. But the body language needs to be different. Like, she needs to be coming on to him, plying him with drinks because he's plying her with drinks, you know, or maybe trying to get into his pants or something. And he's completely disinterested. You know, like, this can all be done, but it can't be done the way they did it. It can't be done with this tone where we're supposed to be laughing. Cause I was laughing my butt off because Dwayne's performance is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make it a good scene because it shouldn't be hilarious. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's a scene from a completely different show, or at least a completely different episode or different set of circumstances. it's not the proper scene for where he should be right now.
This scene actually makes the way he acted after Amber died and him getting together with Danny so quickly, it makes that seem so much better as a way of response than this.
And it undercuts the emotion that you should be feeling
about
all the things that are going on with him. I mean, like you say, it makes sense that he would drink. He's been in a lose-lose situation since this all started because he didn't want to go against what Amber, he didn't want to go against Amber's wishes by throwing the Guardian out to the mob. He also wanted to get Amber back and his child and Trudy. He wanted them back. And he has been in a lose-lose situation since this started. So it makes sense that he will want to numb himself and escape into alcohol. But like you say, both of you, all of you say, this is just the wrong way to frame this scene.
It's hilarious. He's having the time of his life, which clearly he rarely gets to do. He is hamming it up. And I wonder how many takes it took, because I know Ari broke several times. it's a shame because we are supposed to be feeling the depth of despair that Bray is going through. And instead we're like, really, Bray? Because that's the way this will be continually framed, that Bray was wrong for hitting rock bottom and needing to go out. He will later be chastised like he was out partying. And it's like, well, yeah, he clearly was. That's the way you decided to frame it. Like, he's out partying and hooking up with girls. And like, I think he deserved better. I just do, because he has every right to be this broken after everything he's gone through. Season 3 has not been kind to Bray. And he's been thrown for a loop one after another. Just, jeez. And I just don't know why this was a choice, to be honest. That I was amused, I guess. But it's like, to the detriment of what? Your storytelling? I hope my laughter was worth it.
I mean, I also just hate as well that hitting rock bottom means you drink. There are other ways and methods to show somebody at their lowest. I really don't like how it's just, they end up drinking, becoming alcoholics. It just rubs me up the wrong way. I really don't like it.
But do we think these writers are capable of showing anything other than the most obvious?
Yeah,
they used to. But this season has shown that they're not able to do anything but basic and then make it confusing.
But I wonder if it has something to do with the changing censorship. Because if we've all discussed how soft the show has become, and I just kind of wonder if, I mean, for example, we're going to get into season 4 and we're going to, instead of getting like drug use or addiction, we're going to get a metaphor for it. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of wonder if that's why they don't try to do anything deeper for where the depths of despair could take Bray. Because there are a lot of dark places that Bray could go. I wonder if the censorship kind of got in the way with that. So it was like, well, yeah, drinking is one of the last vestiges of darkness we can show. So we'll have him do that.
Honestly, they did it so much better with Trudy.
Earlier season.
The depths of despair, I mean.
I mean, they also did it better with Lex.
Yeah.
I mean, after Zandra died, he hit rock bottom emotionally, and then he started drinking, and that kind of made sense. And then he had to crawl out of that hole that he'd made for himself.
It just doesn't fit for me. She ain't dead. He doesn't know she's dead. He doesn't know what the state of any of them. To reach this bottom, it doesn't fit.
And, you know, and this is all about Amber, because there is no way in hell that this is about his niece's mother being kidnapped.
Yes, we know. Nobody cares enough about Trudy. We get it.
He even talks about the baby and Amber, and he doesn't mention Trudy once, does he, in the bar? So
we know it'll never be. We all know nobody cares about Trudy.
It will never be equal. But you know what I mean? It's like, I just hate it.
Yeah, it's again, this is one of those examples of something being revisited, because apparently the creator only had 10 ideas, and every time they get revisited, they're done worse than they were before.
Okay, so now I need to do a t-shirt that says, "Will somebody please care about Trudy?"
Justice for Trudy.
No, honey, save that t-shirt for season 5.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, because the mosquitoes are everywhere at all times, of course, Bray runs right into them.
You know what? I said, yes, Maz, he deserves his butt kicking. Yeah. I'm sorry, Bray, you're going through some crap, but the abuse you put Maz through, I hope she makes you bleed. Like, you deserve it. I don't care if you're your lowest.
I listened to the episode that was dropped last week where you guys were talking about how they walk in to the they walk into Moz's home and mm-hmm. they basically assault her. And yeah, I'm like, yes, this is judge. This is justice for that.
Justice for Moz
and the mosquitoes.
Now, I didn't feel bad when he ran into her.
Get your chain dildo out and beat him with it. Come on, he deserves it. How dare he break into your sex shop warehouse and treat you like this? He has had this coming from day one. Girls, beat him to death with your dildos.
Telling you, Bray and Moz would have the best hate sex ever. Second only to Bray and Lex.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no, I'm not having that. I'm not having that. I am having Moz on my team, okay? She does not want him. She is not a hetero. I'm not having that. No.
Obviously, could have...
Apologies.
She could have happily let one of the other mosquitoes have him.
Yeah, fine. That's fine.
Yeah, I didn't feel sorry because I felt like this was an ass-kicking that was well-deserved, and he had it coming. So, like, if it had been someone else, I definitely would have felt bad for him. But because it's Moz, and she's definitely mm-hmm. owed this, I was like, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's a bite down, mess him up.
It is. Get your lick in, girl. It didn't bother me. I was like, oh, you in trouble now. Karma came around real quick. But again, it was just because it's Moz, and the way she's been treated by Bray, especially, she's mm-hmm. owed this. And I was just like, oh, well, look at that. I didn't feel bad for him at all that he ran into her, of all people. And she looks so satisfied. I was like, enjoy this, Moz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Justice for Moz, queen of the lesbians and the mosquitoes.
I want to know why KC trades a ring for a horse. Anybody?
Well, why does he also trade it to Adamant as well?
I mean, I was thinking about this earlier. I mean, a ring for a horse. I mean, but it's the Guardian's ring.
They were threatening him, though, weren't they? I mean, they weren't going to take no for an answer. He did give him that look like, if you don't give me the ring, I will just take it and I'll take the horse as well.
Yep.
I mean, it's weird because we're showing that KC is so good at making these wheels and deals. But, I mean, he was pretty useless there, wasn't he, you know?
Weird scene. I get it. They need to acquire the horse because Celine needs to have her weird redemption arc, I guess. I get it. They got to get the horse. But Casey is so unenthusiastic for it. Like, I'm just like, I honestly don't understand why anyone wants the Guardian's ring. I have analyzed the show and never even noticed the guy wore a ring. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get the importance of it, how Pony Joe even heard about it, and why Casey would trade it for a horse. I get why Pony Joe trades the horse for the ring. He's just trying to unload a horse that he can't train, whatever, wants the ring, fine. But it's so clear Casey doesn't want a horse.
Yeah.
and is like, I guess I have to. Like, you can't... Casey, I've seen you talk your way out of so many things. I don't think this is done well enough to convince me that you would just take this horse. Like, Pony Joe doesn't even try to convince you what you could do with the horse. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't buy the seat that Casey would just be like, oh, okay, I guess I have to take it because you'll beat me up. Like, come on. This is a weird way to acquire the horse.
I have to say, I did like that they had one guy there to, you know, identify the ring and to see that the former chosen got reintegrated into some of the other tribes.
Yeah, finally, we got to see one person other than Luke.
See, there were others.
I like the way Pony Joe introduces him, because he looks at him and the guy's like, yeah, that's definitely the ring. And Casey's like, who's that? And he's like, oh, he's no one now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I actually like that. Yeah. It's just a tiny, tiny inkling of how a former chosen might be treated out in the world. You know, he's just grateful that somebody took him in and isn't kicking his butt. You know, that's a nice tiny detail.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just would have liked a better conversation between Pony Joe and Casey. I'd like to have seen Pony Joe convince Casey that he'd want this horse so that Casey's disappointment at the horse later would have more impact. Like, somebody scammed him for once. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been kind of nice. But instead, the way it's done, I'm like, if you didn't want this horse, Casey, I guarantee you could have scammed your way out of it. You know?
whatever, we need the horse for Celine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, again, this is just all of this, all of it, all the things we complain about. Season three is the plot moving characters. Yeah. It's never the characters moving the plot.
Yeah.
Things happen because somebody wanted them to happen and the characters are just following that script. It's not the characters moving the story because of who they are and the things that they would do. You know, instead it's just the plot says Casey needs to trade for a horse. We're not even going to try to make that convincing. Casey just gets a horse that he clearly doesn't want. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the laziest way to get us from point A to point B.
Mm. Yeah. At least they could have, you know, tried to convince him that, you know, a horse being food or transportation could get him so much more. You know, it would be worth a lot. That would have made sense, but not like this.
Yeah. Like, there's just, there's no convincing.
If there had been way more guys from Pony Joe's side around him and he felt really, really trapped and visually trapped, then maybe. You know?
Yeah, she just wasn't executed well.
It's like season three exists in two different worlds. You have the first half of season three and the second half. This tail end is like a fever dream of the. You thought the writing was bad in season three. You were like, this is about lazy. And then it's like, oh no, it can get so much worse. And you're just, there's no one at the wheel. And the car is going 75.
It's one of those AI-driven cars.
I should jump out, but I'm scared. Like, this is terrifying. Where are we going?
But it comes back to, it's got too many episodes.
Zoot took the wheel.
Zoot took the wheel!
Zoot, please take the wheel.
That brings Series 3, Episode 42 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel. And if you'd like to take part in a future episode of podcast or team leave us a message, you can reach us by our Facebook, website, or Instagram. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. So we'll see you next time for episode 43. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.